Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Psychosocial Distancing Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Daniel Chadbourne. With me, as always, is Thomas Brooks.
Oh, hi.
Hi
We're
there.
back.
Yeah. So I've got some good news, bad news to sandwich.
Okay.
The bad news is that I did not do the readings in advance.
Right on.
The good news is I wrote this chapter.
Yay.
The bad news is I don't remember writing this chapter.
So we're playing by grad school rules because I didn't do the readings either.
But the good news to follow all of that is that people be feeling things.
Well, people do be feeling things. They feel lots of things.
Yes, and that's where we are today.
Not that you remember writing this, but there is some fun little sections in this chapter about celebrity court cases, and I do want to like give a shout out to my large-handed brother, OJ, who passed in the last week since recording.
Yeah, that dates it. I want to say the obvious, like, at least now the family can know that, like, it, you know, his wife's killer is finally laid to rest. it's wild, but like that's probably so, like, I remember as we were writing these, I was going through and I'd basically just go and type in like emotion and fandom or emotion and whatever, and I would just see what would pop up, and I would, you know, save 100 articles and then read through them. But that was sort of one of those things where like it taps into like where the emotion comes from. And then it splits between like the content of what we're doing and then like the fandom itself. So we either get emotion from the people or emotions. It's like fandom fanship, emotion from the group, emotion from the interest. The OJ trial, the Michael Jackson trials, I think are cited in here. It was a wild time without the internet, right?
Right, yeah, it's crazy that that's pre-internet, because I was thinking like a more recent example of the Amber Heard Johnny Depp trials that went on last year, which,
Yeah,
you know, F me, that feels like years ago now. But that was insane, and like the wall-to-wall coverage, like there were YouTube channels that popped up just to cover that.
And I mean, we had the same thing. We had like 24-hour news that was covering. I don't even think we had it to that extent, though. But yeah, it was one of the first big, like, widely televised trials that got a lot of news coverage, a lot of public interest. And then like OJ in particular is like flash in the pan. Perfect timing, because it was post. Right after the Rodney King incident, right after the cops, the LAPD, who beat Rodney King while they were on video, all got acquitted. And then we had the LA riots. And so there was almost like this need to see someone from the other side, like see the cops basically be told off. The downside is that most lawyers today, I was watching a video on this recently. Most lawyers today would probably argue that it was like maybe like the worst jury decision, like based on the evidence in history, like maybe not history, but it's up there. But I mean, OJ had a great team of lawyers, and we wouldn't have the Kardashians if not for him winning the case or being acquitted.
That is true.
Which, that's a whole nother thing with emotion, right? I mean, that's what we have now, nonstop reality TV.
And even things that are like not billed as reality TV are treated like reality TV. Like the, even though I wouldn't say that this is necessarily like a fandom per se, but the, pro-Palestine protests that are going on in all the Ivy Leagues right now is definitely being televised and like interacted with online as if it were a fandom.
I brought that up in our class today because we were talking about inter versus intragroup conflict, and like it kind of boiled down to like trying to find examples and like of like intragroup that already don't exist in like an already like competitive violent group. So we were talking about like at universities, and I was like, yeah, I think we're still talking about intergroup conflict because these are like students protesting against the administration or faculty. Like we're part of the same group, but we're in like subgroups. But I had read like Columbia just shut down for 2 weeks. They went online because people be protesting, and apparently it was so disruptive. A lot of the commentary on that incident has been like, well, they're just doing it so they can say that they got the protests settled down. You just send everyone home for 2 weeks. You don't let them actually go out, then no one sees the protests. Which is, again, like just such a weird move. When like
I just want to say there's probably a podcast episode somewhere in our backlog on here that somebody can find where I have said over and over again that university administrators don't actually care about DEI, but they put on the face of DEI and justice, etc. And this is what happens when you do that. You are not sincere, but you act sincere, and people believe you and think that they can go out and protest, and then they find out that, oh, you don't actually care.
If I'm going to take a guess, January 2022, when we talked to Henley about Thorndike.
Maybe.
That, I
Did I
mean,
get
I'll,
spicy in that one?
I mean, it's somewhere around there, because at that point we were talking about, no, because we probably didn't get, emotionally riled up in that one, because Dr. Henley can talk.
Yeah, no, we can.
We listen and enjoy.
Grad school rules.
Yep.
Didn't do the readings, show up, enjoy, contribute a little bit, go home.
Yeah, I mean, and that's probably something that's a part of it. Like, actually, like when we get into other chapters and talk about like what motivates people to action, we've talked about this in some previous chapters. Emotion is a real powerful motivator. Whether it's manufactured and made to feel like reality TV, or if it is kind of like a genuine concern for the people of Palestine, it will spurn people, or the uncomfortableness that administration has to face when they brought into the light and they're like, we don't want to have to deal with this, we don't want to have to make a decision, we'll just shut classes down for 2 weeks even though our students are paying $90,000 a year.
No, it is insane. But back to the point, though, it is being treated like fandom online.
Yeah, I was thinking about this because I've seen, like, when I saw this stuff with the kind of Israel-Palestine stuff, I was thinking about how I think we're not seeing it as strong as it was within like the first year, maybe year and a half, but like the internet kind of fandom around Ukraine has like died down a bit, which like is, again, deeply unsettling that we're talking about this. Like a war and supporting a side of a war, in the realm of fandom.
But it's kind of the way that like Americans know how to engage in politics at this point and social stuff. Like, if it's not like within like the structure of a fandom, we don't really know what to do with it. Like, direct political action, no thanks. I'm gonna like make my Facebook user like image a Ukrainian flag.
And it's not really a fan thing. It's social identity. But yeah, that overlaps with politics. So, again, if you're anti-supporters of Russia, like, of course, that's gonna bleed into your politics and things like that. And then, yeah, it probably overlaps with fandom, just with like, which we'll get into next time, with like the over commercialization and materialization of a lot of these like fan communities. That, I mean, and emotions heavily tied to that, because you want people emotionally invested, either angry, having FOMO, that fear of missing out, or hey, you're feeling down, why don't you buy some stuff and you'll feel better, be a part of this group, it'll make you happy, here's some nostalgia.
Check out my merch.
Yeah. And yeah, that sort of ties into like that. And then so that like also ties into like not only wanting to show support by changing your avatar, but probably buying, a blue and yellow scarf, and giving some money to and I mean it works in a sense if you do want to support, the relief effort that way. It's a great way. I will say, I think, I mean, thinking of like emotional reactions to fandom, I think that like we could probably look back. If someone hasn't already written a paper on it, they probably should, on like Zelensky's image and how it kind of helped to build this sort of like parasocial relationship and this sort of emotional connection to this kind of, beleaguered leader whose country's being invaded, and how that compares to like strongman Putin. Because you're gonna have different identities that tie to that, and who is actually interested in supporting them. Yeah, it's probably something there.
There probably is, because I think also there's this aspect that you would, like you mentioned before, kind of the distinction between like the fandom emotions versus like the fanship emotions, and like I could totally see, like, and maybe we bring this back down to the fandom realm of like actual like media content. But like with Star Wars, for example, like I would say the drama that went on with the third trilogy, that was mostly fandom emotional content, right? Of like fans like getting riled up about casting and acting and story and character development and stuff like that. Not necessarily that the content itself made them mad, but they were making each other mad.
Yeah.
Whereas like other a aspects, like I don't know, maybe like your Game of Thrones, like that's definitely content emotions throughout that series, where like people were sharing those emotions online, but they weren't riling each other up to feel things. It was mostly like, oh, the Red Wedding, like I'm now traumatized.
Or season 8 was so terrible, I'm now traumatized.
Right, yeah. So like there is, I think I agree with you that there is a distinction between when the fans themselves like create the emotional, like I don't know, egregore versus like the content specifically.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, and it's also like what emotions are being elicited. I mean, we see that a lot, I guess, and arguably in like modern day politics, if we want to view politics as fandom, anger is a great motivator. And so there's always something you have to be angry about. There's always something to get clicks and views and get you tuning in to the morning news. And it's not, I mean, the
And
whole,
every election is the most important election you've ever been to.
and right before every election, like all these terrible things start happening. Like we suddenly start really getting concerned about the border again. And yeah, it's, I mean, that's,
Exhausting.
yeah. And I mean, but that's like the nature of like modern information. It's just, there's so much of it. It's exhausting, because it generates views. It feeds the algorithm. If it bleeds, it leads. There's a lot of worry. Like again, thinking about like needing to rile up emotions, there's a lot of articles being written about, Joe Biden's ahead in all the polls, but how this is bad for Joe Biden, because like they want it to be like it needs to be a tight race, because if it's a tight race, people are watching news stations, people are chiming in, they're getting that ad revenue for political messages. They're like it can't be it can't be a landslide, or it can't be an expected land. It needs to seem like, oh, this was unexpected. We didn't plan on this happening.
Right. And they also need people to like not have excuses not to go vote in November.
Yeah.
Like it needs to be perceived as the most important thing that you do in November.
Yeah. To be fair, we could move to, I don't know, would we maybe lose some of that if we move to like, we lose some of the emotion behind how we vote if we move to like Australia's mandatory voting?
Probably
Must be
that, and
something you
switch
do.
over to like parliamentarian system where like it's no longer like a head-to-head like boxing matchup every 4 years.
To rank choice voting.
Yeah, like I would probably tone things down quite a bit, but like you said, there's too much money to be made in the all
Absolutely.
stakes. This could be the last election you ever vote in. Like, it's all gonna burn down, kind of
Yeah.
content.
Murdoch and all of them are going to be really upset when there's no like presidential debates. It's like so much money in that. Yeah, but like that's part of it. It's part of, and then I think now, especially with politics, we see both the fandom and the fanship side. So there's the interest, like it's a spectacle at this point. Because there's always, I mean, like the media made a killing during Trump's presidency because of the spectacle of it
Oh, yeah.
all. But then there's also this like parasocial group side of things where like some people, I'm not gonna say it's like a, I don't know, there's probably some unironic like I love Joe Biden to the extent that like, I'm putting flags and stickers all over my car. Like there's someone out there on it, but
And they live in Santa Fe.
yeah, I describe, not to go off on another tangent, but I described Santa Fe as it's Florida for Democrats.
It truly, truly is. Like, it is the place where like coastal white liberal
Go to
upper middle
retire.
class people go to retire.
I'm glad I'm not the only one who perceived it that way.
Oh yeah, it's wild. And that's why everything closes at like 8.
Yeah, well, yeah, we're just in blue Florida, Thomas.
We're in Blue Florida. F me.
Need more New Mexico man stories, like Florida man. And that, like, yeah,
Truly.
another good example of like the spectacle, like we're, and that stuff's just sort of appealing. Yeah, so
Emotions. People are profiting off of them when you feel things.
yeah, and next time we'll talk about how that connects to fandom and how buying stuff and engaging in materialism is a part of fan culture. You need to show that you are a fan. How much of a fan you are by how much you own and how many special things you own. How many Trump and Biden flags you put on your car. That shows
Oh my
how much
God.
of a fan you are.
I want to put both on my car at the same time.
Well, on that thought, we'll pick up on that later.
We'll talk to y'all later. Talk at y'all later.
Bye.